We are two guys in our mid-30s with wives, kids, jobs, and we started with shaky 11 handicaps. But we've gotten a little bit better, and we're still trying to become scratch golfers this year. This is Chasing Scratch. Episode 12, The Lull. And we are back. This is Mike.
And this is Eli.
And we are going to jump right into it today. It's been 3.5 weeks since the letdown of the third major. And honestly, there's been little chance for us to redeem ourselves on the course since then. Work has been busy, kids have been sick, and the weather has been, well, if you live in the eastern United States, you know how the weather has been. Rain has killed us. In fact, it's raining right now as I record this. It's translated to one round for me, two rounds for Eli. We're not going to move a lot of handicap points playing that little. But while there haven't been many rounds, there's been a few developments. One, Eli played his first round with his new wedges. Two, something happened to me on the range that made me make a rash decision. And three, we finally decided on what our final major would be, date, time, place, and stakes. And we talked about all that in one conversation last Friday. And it was late, and things got punchy. You'll probably be able to tell. You played around today, right?
Yeah, I can cover mine pretty quickly.
Let me at your favorite course.
I got clearance tonight to go out and play a golf league 9-hole round at 6 o'clock, and I went to Lakeside.
This is the same course, if you'll remember, that I strongly advised you never to play again, and you strongly came back at me and said, no, I will like this course. I'm going to make myself like this course.
I'm
going to
dominate this course. It's my life goal.
Yes.
But I went out and played because it is 3 minutes from my house. So I can give you I don't know that I'd call it a dramatic reading. Well, let me tell you how it went here real quick. Hole number one, par.
Okay.
Hole number two, par.
Okay.
Greens in regulation, not loose at all. Driver, nothing. You know, nothing really feels real good yet because you just basically ran onto the course.
Okay.
Hole number three is the par three. I'm probably 15 to 18 yards from the pin, and I'm in the rough. I'm right in front of the sand trap, and I pull out the glistening, shiny, groove-filled 56-degree wedge for the
first
time.
That's right. This is the first round with the new wedge.
First time wedges. With the new wedges. I hit them when I picked them up Thursday.
And these are the LeBron James signature series, right?
That's right.
The Cleveland...
They have a
Cleveland
logo.
CBXs?
They have a logo of him with his hands on the back, and witness is on the back of the cavity.
And they come with oversized headbands.
That's right. The headband actually is up. The cavity's up near the handle, just to try to hide other things that are going on. And so, here's what you need to know. I hit out of the rough. I hit up and the ball checks and dies immediately. I had a 3-footer for par, knocked it in.
Well.
So the first shot with the wedges with the 56 was clean. It got the grooves and it bit. I was like shocked because I was not
scintillating.
I was not hitting out of a surface that it should have bit. So then I went to the fourth hole, which is that really tough hole. You know, down a little dogleg right, down, and then up the hill.
Yeah.
I had 150 in and hit what I thought was a pretty good wedge, but it ended up being short. And I got out the 56 and I got another groove filled check chip shot up and down par. So
four straight pars.
So I'm now 4 holes in. I haven't had a swing that has felt real good, but that's all right. I'm still getting loose, but I'm even.
you're even, and you're, and it's shocking to feel like you're not hitting a wedge with the consistency of a smooth ping pong paddle.
Yes, it was interesting not to have a sheet of metal on the end of a stick with baby oil on it. So
you stop. You're not using the shovel.
I put the hockey stick away, and actually had something with distinguishable grooves in its face. So
okay, so you're four. Even through four, though.
Even, but I'm not. It's weird. Like,
okay.
I haven't hit a swing. I haven't had a swing that feels good at all. And okay. I told you on number four, I'm 150 out. My wedge goes like 140. I mean, it was really weird. It was just an odd couple holes hitting shots. So,
did you not apply the cream before the round?
I literally got out the deer antler spray in the fifth hole and I said, something's got to change right now. I took a blood sample. I put some deer antler spray in it, and I shot it right back in me.
That's when your roaming cyclist came by with your
with the blood spool
with the and just spun your blood, just pump some EPO into you.
Yeah. By the way, you know, we talk about side note here, tangent warning hashtag tangent coming. We talk about the baseball era with steroids. It wasn't that long ago when native Kentuckian Kenny Perry, who was like 85 at the time, was winning tournaments in the PGA Tour. That, if there wasn't more of a sign that deer antler spray usage was just rampant, that had to be it.
He did have a big head.
Kenny Perry was literally, he might have been the top money winner. I mean, he made the Ryder Cup that year.
He should have won the Masters. Remember that?
Yes.
If he gets up and down on the 18th hole that one year, I forgot what it was.
But I'm like, Kenny Perry was literally in contention every weekend. What kind of world it's are true. We living in when Kenny Perry at age 94 is winning tournaments? Anyway, sorry, tangent over. So fifth hole is that stupid hole around the corner. These holes are all miserable.
You love this course so much.
I hate this freaking course. So the fifth hole is this stupid, you know, that stupid hole where if you hit it left, the water's left, and it's a dogleg right. You can't hit driver. So I hit an iron that I thought was fine. It ended up landing on the side hill. So I hit a wedge. It was another one of those weird wedges that went 135 yards, 140 yards. It was just odd. But it was off a side hill, you know, in a crappy lie, so I didn't think too much of it. But hit another good.
So it wasn't your fault.
It's not your fault. It was definitely it was a Sean.
It was a Sean
moment.
Lie.
It was a Sean lie. I just kept
psychiatrist
telling myself,
Sean lie.
I kept telling myself, it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Is that a new phrase?
Yes.
When you get a result that's not your fault, on a, like you get a bad break on a hole. You just say, I shawned it. It was a Sean.
I did everything I could with it. It was a Sean lie. It's like, why didn't you get up and down? Well, I missed left, and I had this Sean lie, and I couldn't get it. I did all I could do with it.
And I'll say, don't F with me. Tell me the truth. Was it really a Sean lie?
I'll say, do you have any experience with Sean lies? Okay. And then I'll just eat apples for the next hour.
Oh, gracious. We're never going to get through this round. All right.
Okay, so
you're short again, so you have to pull out the 56 again?
So I hit a 56, and my 8 o'clock swing, I'm not used to it being struck with a club that has an actual metal face. So it carried to the distance that it should have carried, so which I didn't want it to. I'm used to no grooves and no metal, so everything is underhit by at least 20%. So it actually flew the way it was supposed to, but I ended up with like a 12-footer, missed it. So I took my first bogey.
Okay.
So next hole's...
One over after five.
Yeah. Next hole's that stupid par three with a tree covering half of the right side of the green. And
oh, yeah.
I hit a ball on, two-putt par. Next hole's that dog leg left.
That was the one where we discussed
quitting,
stopping.
Quitting after the ninth hole.
quitting for the day, and then I was discussing quitting forever, but yes.
Yeah, you were already Google, I think you were Google mapping your way back to Greensboro, and if you left that night, what time you could get in. I crushed a drive, and I'm 124 yards out, and I pull out for the first time the 50-degree do it for the land wedge.
Woo!
And the 50-degree wedge, I did not hit a whole lot of when I picked it up. I hit the 56 for almost 45 minutes. I hit the 50 for like 10. And when I was with Larry, my pro getting fitted for these, this was the wedge that we were kind of in the middle on. I said, do I want to go 52? Do I want to go 50? And we were talking through the yardages. And he said, it sounds to me like you really need a wedge that you can hit 120 and 125 yards. Those are like the two yardages you need to be thinking about this wedge.
And this is you're 124 yards out. So this is
the first.
This is
test.
Wheelhouse.
This is wheelhouse. And I thought, okay, I'm either going to flush this thing way over the green or it's going to be perfect. And it was absolutely primo. Hole high. It even sucked back a little bit. Awesome ball flight. And it was literally like 123. I mean, it was money yardage. So I had about a 10-footer. Missed it, but wasn't a bad putt at all. Went to the eighth hole. And
you're one over at this point.
I'm one over at this point, and I'm trying not to get carried away, although I'm starting to have crazy thoughts. Like, it's like 7:30, because, again, thank you to the twosome that I waited on for nine straight holes for not letting me play through. you guys were fantastic. Also, I'd like to thank the one of you that took four practice swings before every shot. You can't rehearse your swing enough. So I go to the eighth hole, and I don't know what it is. I've had trouble. You remember the eighth hole. It's not that long, but it's got those like four weird bushes on the right side, and that's it. That's like the only danger. Naturally, I hit over into one of them. So I got penalized. Long story short, I ended up taking a double on the hole. I had a putt that lipped out, but I ended up taking a double. So I'm three over. And heading to the 985-yard par 5 finishing ninth hole with a cut, with a dogleg right, and a ditch in the middle. It might be the worst hole design on planet Earth.
But hey, you're going to keep playing this course.
But I do love Fig Newtons. So I obliterate a drive. I mean, I absolutely mangled a driver and hit another really – I hit a hybrid really well, so – I've got like 95 yards into the green, which may sound ridiculous on a par 5 after a killed driver and a killed hybrid, but that's just the beauty of this hole. So they put the pin placement, though, in a really, really tough spot. It was all the way on the left, and then on the left side of the green was a nasty bunker. And I had a complete head case moment and just did not – I hit the green, but I hit it like 40 feet right of the stick. I was just terrified to go at it. So I took a two putt and finished with a 39.
So you got a 39 on the, that's one half of an 18 right now.
39, but it went with my score from, I think it might've been my score from a couple days ago. Remember when I quit after the ninth hole, because the course was so slow, I left.
So
it went with a 43, but I finished it at 82. Okay. I was playing the blues, which are way back, and with the stroke differential, it knocked me down to a 7-6, my friend.
Well,
so we got a competition, but let me tell you a couple takes.
7.6.
7 points, the lowest I've ever been. So. But let me tell you the couple brief takeaways that I thought were interesting. First of all, the wedges, first takeaway, I can already tell I'm going to love these clubs. So that was a...
You're doing it for the land.
I'm doing it for the land. I'm probably
going to... This is for Northeast Ohio.
Eventually, I'm going to sell those wedges and go to wedges that have given me a better shot of winning a title. But But I did love the wedges. The wedges were awesome. I do think after some practice, I think that's going to make a big difference. But let me tell you the biggest takeaway from today. So I spent the bulk of my day trying to implement the pre-shot routine.
Yes, and I was going to ask about this.
I was literally listening to the 11th episode in my ears while I was playing. I had some earbuds in. I'm listening to the 11th episode, and we literally get to the part during Honesty Hour where we talk about how fidgety we've gotten over the ball and how restless. Uh-huh. And I'm on like the third hole, and we start talking about, you know what, we need to just play the swing that we've got up till this point every time you go to play a real round. Like, you can't go out and try to pull all these things together. You got to just play the swing you've got.
Yep.
And I said, you know what, that's what I've got to do. I don't feel great today. I haven't had any time to warm up. I'm not feeling real comfortable. And instead of the first two holes, I was trying to get into these things, these spots, and I was like, no, this is stupid. I'm just going to play what I've got today, and I'm going to make sure I don't get fidgety over the ball. Like, that's my whole goal. And here's what was interesting to me. So I get done, and I put up a 39, so I'm like, man, okay, it's like 7:15, 7:30. I could probably, if everybody's off the course now, I could get nine holes in by 8:15. And if I could put up another round in the 30s, like this could be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the back nine's way easier than the front. So I'm starting to try to, you know, map. Like, we hit the seventh hole, and, you know, you start looking at all the other holes beside you. I'm like, okay, clear, 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 clear. Well, then these super awesome guys in front of me, they make the turn, and they are not letting me pass. So they're sitting at the tee box. And I'm like, daggone it, I can't sit here, you know, and play another hour and 30-minute nine holes as a single. So, but I wasn't ready to leave yet. I was like, oh, I want to hit a couple more balls. No one's on the front nine now at this point. So I round the corner and I go back to the first hole. But here's the deal. I knew I didn't have time to get nine in at this point. I had kind of determined, okay, you're not going to get nine in. Just play two holes and then you can go home. But here's the point. All of a sudden, the pressure of putting a score was gone because I knew I was just going to play one, maybe two holes, and then I was getting out of there. I go to the first tee box. I put my ball down. I'm over the ball for maybe 3 seconds, and I hit a 325-yard bomb right down the middle. I go up to the ball. I get my 56 out. I'm 100 yards in. I hit a gorgeous pin-high, sit-down, you know, spinning wedge, boom, right there. Missed my birdie putt, tap in, par. And I thought about it for a second, and I was like, have we turned into head cases? Like,
have we turned into head cases?
Or are we just, yeah, you're right, we have been head cases, but has the head casing hit levels that's just unprecedented? Because the moment the scoring was taken off the table, it was a stripe show.
The answer to your question is absolutely yes. It's absolutely yes.
How do we get around this?
Well, I had a thought today.
Okay.
I think our next episode needs to be a mental episode.
The Mentalist?
I think we are going to call it The Mentalist. That is a given.
Can one of our listeners, does anybody have access to him? Can you tweet him and see if he can give us some advice?
No, but I think we should each read a book about handling pressure. Maybe I'll reread that book I was reading before about the play box and the think box or whatever. What do you think about that?
Honestly, I'm down to try anything because it makes no sense to me how I go basically nine holes. I have 30. I probably ended up with 15 putts. But so that's what, 24 shots? How I had 24 shots in a round and 21 of them felt like garbage. I was uncomfortable. I did not feel good. Like, they didn't do anything I wanted them to do. The moment the scores entered, I stand over the ball. There's no fidgeting. There's no twitching. And I'm just striping balls. That to me says I've got mental issues. So I am down. I'm down to try anything that we think would help.
And what if we just what if we threw this out to the listeners? Is anyone listening to us a sports psychologist? Is anyone here a marine biologist?
Of course, was angry that day, my friend. Okay.
I'm just saying, if we could get, I think we should, if we could get a sports psychologist to talk to us, I think it would sink in.
I don't even care if there, does anybody know a psychologist? They don't even have to be trained in sports.
Does anyone know anyone who took a psychology course in college?
So yeah, I'm absolutely down for that. And maybe we could get some, well, first of all, maybe we could get some feedback from the listeners as to some a book or two that they think would be a good read. But
yeah, because they are fully aware, especially after all the whining I did last episode, they are fully aware of our mental frailties, particularly mine.
But I think this, I'm telling you, when you go your next round trying to implement this pre-shot routine, probably three times I caught myself fidgeting and I had to stop and back off. And I was like, nope, I cannot. I got to cut this crap off. I'm going to go. I'm walking back behind the ball. I'm going to go through it again. I'm going to put the club down. I'm going to go. And my swings were so bad. I thought life was supposed to get easier at a certain point with this quest.
Yeah. Well, I do have a solution for that, though.
Okay. Bhagwan?
I've become a Rajneeshi. This is my last day of actually audibly speaking. So, there's a couple courses of action that you can take in a situation like this. One, you can deal with the issue that is there, or you can focus your attention
on a shiny new
object that promises to help you no matter how bad your swing or mental game is, and that is new equipment.
I think I like the second option.
Whew. All right, I have to tell you this story. I've been holding this story for like 3 days. It's been killing me.
It's killing me because you told me you had something to tell me, and I tried to pull it out of you. And you said, I'm not going to do it until a microphone's on. So I don't know what's coming.
Okay. All right. So I'm at the range like 5 days ago. And I'm at the range owned by my pro and his brother. So my pro is Rob. His brother is Rick. And Rick is the club fitter.
Come on, Rick.
And yeah, come on, Rick. These guys are top 100 club fitters. They're always rated by Golf Digest as a top 100 club fitters. So tee to green apex. If we put this out there, go see him. But Rick has fit my whole family, like my dad, my uncle Jim, a couple of our friends. So like, and I'm up there getting lessons from Rob. So they recognize my face. But I'm hitting balls, and then all of a sudden Rob and Rick come start hitting balls, and they're like 10 yards away from me. And Rick just starts wandering over, and he starts looking in my bag in between one of my shots.
And Rick's the club fitter.
Rick's the club fitter, and he looks at my, pulls out an iron, which is the I-200s, which he fit me into last April. And he said, you know, these are the predecessors now.
Oh. And then you felt a hook go right into the side of your mouth.
Yeah. I said, well, I laughed and I said, yeah, I've seen the I-210s. Those look pretty. And he was like, yeah, Rob's got them right here. This is his first time hitting them. I said, oh, really? And so he just pulls the 7-iron out of Rob's bag and he walks over and hands it to me. But I noticed right away that the club weight is different. He has a heavier shaft. Mm-hmm. But I also noticed right away that it feel like I love the feel of it. So I hit one and it's okay. And I was like, okay, I'll probably just hit one more. I decided to hit one more, and Lenny, I might need some help recreating this. I'm not sure if you can find some royalty-free music that resembles The Natural, where Roy Hobbs...
And seven buckets late.
It's the homer.
Did you hit a clock? Did you bust the clock tower in the middle of one of these swings?
I hit this shot, and my knees buckled. I let out an audible groan. I'm talking piercing trajectory. The ball stayed in the air for about 3.5 minutes. With a little draw.
Come on, ping.
I mean, I... while the ball's in the air, I changed religions. Tears came to my eyes. My life flashed before me. And I looked over, and they both have these giant smiles on their faces, and they said, well, the second one went good.
They started and to I said, reel you in.
And I walked over. I said, thank you for letting me hit this. I don't want to ever touch it again.
Go away.
Go away. So fast forward about 4 days. I make the call.
Oh, dear mother. You asked for a price, didn't you?
And I get Rick on the phone. And I said, Rick, I just have to ask you a question. You might not remember. I was like, it's Mike. The other day I was up there and you let
Rick, you remember me from your 7 o'clock hustle.
So I said, Rick, I don't know if you remember, but you gave me Rob's club, the other day. That's all I said. And he said, that second shot you hit keeping you up at night.
Oh my gosh.
I said, yes, literally it is.
That's the best thing I've ever heard.
I could not believe it. I couldn't believe he even remembered it. But I said, so I just started asking him questions. I said, I'm not sure. I'm not buying that there's that much of a difference between the I-200 and the I-210. I said, but that shaft, that whatever that shaft was, I said, that felt unbelievable. Like when I went back to hitting my old irons,
they feel light. I was hitting
the ball well that day, but nothing felt like that.
Yeah.
And so I just said, like, what are my options? Like, can I come in and just try that weight? I mean, because I was fitted before I had all these lessons. Like, maybe my swing is at a point where I should be in a different weight. And he said, well, that's potentially true, but we'll try. He said, we can try a couple different things. But I looked into it. And because I was like, well, I'll just replace the shaft. Shafts are only like $20. But if you take $20 times the amount of clubs,
right,
that comes to like $300.
Right. So then you might as well just spend another $400 and get the new set.
Well, if I look at how much the new set is minus what I can sell my old set for on eBay, it's about $300.
Oh, boy.
So this is basically done. This is.
Are you asking me my opinion, or are you just telling me what you're going to do?
No, I'm not even asking you. This purchase is already made. It's all over. Unless I go, so I'm going on Sunday. I have an appointment, and you'll be shocked at this. My dad also has an appointment.
Oh my gosh, he's getting his fourth set of clubs this year.
But
your dad has one iron left in his bag. He's finally going to replace it with a hybrid.
But I'm just going to be honest with you. I've never that shot. I've been thinking about it ever since. I cannot get it out of my head. That's how good it felt. So I'm really interested to go back and see if it was a fluke. Or if that shaft makes a consistent difference over a whole session, because if it does, honestly, I was about to spend way too much money on golf shoes. I'm just going to put that money towards, I'll just play in my bare feet.
Like bog run.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I've told you what I'm okay, going go to do, and I don't care what your opinion is, but what is your opinion?
Well, here was the first thing that came to mind, other than the fact that I guarantee you that day you were on the range, Wesley Snipes told Rick to give you that wedge.
So you think I'm just being hustled completely?
I think there's like 14 of you that are like Rick, and he's going, that third shot, can't get it out of your, second shot, can't get it out of your head. He's probably got like a note card. He's like, yep, here's Mike. He was shot. It's like a Matrix. Mike.
He's got a little green highlighter.
Second shot.
Green means go ahead and mention it.
Mike, second shot, 7-iron. Hey, Mike, can't get that second shot, 7-iron out of your head, can you?
He's got a court. I did notice he's got a quarterback wristband with a flap.
Is his wife's name Gloria? So here's my thought. If we get past the fact that Wesley Snipes and Rick just completely hustled you again for a second set of clubs.
Yes.
Here was the first thought I had. So we have at my office these bats, and you know, Louisville Slugger, obviously here in Kentucky, and you know, when we partner with people, sometimes we'll send a bat out with our team name on it, just something for them to put in their office. So anyway, we've got these bats laying around from Louisville Slugger, and they're like wooden bats, like a real bat a baseball player would use.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, just like we did in college, when I need to think through anything, what do I do in my office?
You swing the baseball bat like a golf club.
Absolutely. I carry the bat everywhere, and I swing it like a club. And also, I have a gigantic window with a fantastic reflective angle. So when I'm thinking about anything at work, I get to look at my backswing. So here's the weird thing at work. My backswing holding this bat is flawless. It looks ridiculous. And so the other day I was thinking, why does my backswing, everything about my swing feels so good when I'm holding this freaking bat? And it dawned on me. I was like, this wooden bat weighs 50 ounces more than my golf club. And what I immediately thought about was, in the midst of our psycho Slotvanovich issue down at the Myrtle golf trip, do you remember when we were YouTubing videos on how to get in the slot?
Yes.
And the one guy said, this is a great drill. Take two golf clubs.
Yep.
The extra weight will give you a good feel for what the feeling you should have when the club drops as you start your transition.
Right.
But the point is, his point was, the more weight you have on your whatever you're holding, the easier it will be to simulate that drop. So when you mentioned that earlier about the heavier shaft, that was the first thing I thought about. And I thought, you know, the heavier shaft might actually help. It might have helped you drop the club a little bit better, like you're wanting to drop it.
Right.
So I don't know. That might not actually be that crazy. But I do think, when did you buy these clubs? It was last year, wasn't it?
Last April. So I've had them for a year and a half.
You are truly your father's son, because there's only one other human being on the planet I know that would actually go through with this kind of purchase, and it is your dad.
I love you, Dad.
To give the listeners out there some context for Mike's dad, when I was contemplating, when we had our honesty moment coming out of Vegas or wherever it was, and I finally determined I've got to get a new putter, most people would go down to their pro. They'd go down to a Dick's Sporting Goods. I called Mike up and said, what putters are in your dad's garage? Because I knew there was probably 15 of them that had only been used six times that were perfect, phenomenal.
Perfect condition.
They were mint condition. And I said, I need for Mike to just tell me what's in his dad's garage. I'll just buy one off his dad.
Well, and the best part is, as a joke, I texted Uncle Jim and said, hey, we're going to see Rick on Sunday. This was literally yesterday. And he was researching plane tickets from Nashville.
Let's give some more context on the way that this family has... You mentioned I think it's your dad, your brother, Uncle Jim, and you, right? Have all been fitted by Rick.
And Bill.
And Bill, their friend Bill, who goes on our golf trip. So literally now, for any listeners, if we do end up having a listener cup at some point, you will hear Mike on a bad swing yell, "Come on, Rick." And it's... It's because he's blaming Rick for the fitting in the club that hit the bad swing.
It's like a Sean swing.
when he has a Sean swing, it's all Rick's fault. However, anytime any of the family members hit a good swing, they all yell, "Come on, Rick," in a positive way. Like, "Come on, Rick, there we go.
Yeah, Rick.
Yeah, Rick, there we go, Rick." So this went on at the Octagon in October for probably a good 9 holes before I could figure out who Rick was.
Oh, it's my favorite thing in the world. I'll never get tired of complimenting Rick. All right, in all seriousness, do you think this is a bad move?
I'll say this. I don't think it's going to be the solution.
I don't think it is either.
On the flip side, though, for $300... I'm like, why not?
I'll just quickly interject here and play you some audio from Sunday's club fitting.
This is Rob's. Rob Schaff.
Yeah. Oh, my.
You hate that club, Mike.
That's a time yet?
I told you you were fit already.
That was the same feel.
It didn't take long. I ordered the new Ping I210 3-through gap wedge irons in the dynamic gold 120 gram shaft. I'm counting the seconds until they get here, and I drastically miscalculated how much they would be. So I am currently selling my entire closet on eBay trying to recover the costs. Special shout out to Tyler from the Hosel Jockeys and Lifestocks podcast for helping me realize that people will buy almost anything on eBay. Now, back to Friday's conversation. Like I said, this purchase is probably already made. There's probably no way around it. I think you should be rooting for this purchase, though, because I've got limited time if I do get new clubs to dial in distances for the last 20, but also the Alabama trip in October. And then we actually have an announcement to make. I wasn't going to make it in this conversation, but maybe we need to.
I think we need to.
We have decided on the final, I guess that's the final major, Glory's Last Shot. To decide who pays for a golf trip.
Are you assuming that I'm not going to get to scratch by the end of the year?
I was just about to say, there's a big asterisk, because if either of us gets to scratch, then this trip is null and void. It's just for fun. And I think that's a real possibility. So
I think it's a strong possibility. What do we do when we both, what's the tiebreaker when we both get there?
Well, that's what this will be. So when we both get to scratch in the next 8 weeks, when we're both at scratch, the tiebreaker becomes this: what we have now determined is a 36 hole match play event at our old course that we played in college, River Bend in Shelby, North Carolina.
Gosh, I told you this the other day.
I get butterflies just thinking about that, those 36 holes.
I do too, but I'm not going to lie. It's going to be nerve-wracking. I told you the other day, I broke out in a cold sweat thinking about the first two holes.
The first hole, the
I hate the first hole. It scares me to death.
I'm going
to
be honest with you. Most nights when I can't sleep, I play the first hole at Riverbend, and I never know what to hit off the tee. I think the perfect shot is a 3-iron with a draw, but which I don't have. I don't have that shot.
This is when you know a hole is really hard. You know, every time I play a course in my head, I'm like 4-under. I mean, it never fails. I bogey number one in my head every single time I play it. I've never parred that hole. I've never hit the green in regulation in my head.
Oh.
Yeah, it scares the crud out of me. And then the second hole, every time in my head I smash a drive down the right side, and then I fly the green and go into the water.
I'm so glad we're playing this course. You have such bad thoughts here.
Yeah, so it's official. We're going back 36 holes.
That's 2 weeks after
Alabama.
2 weeks after Alabama.
Well, there you go. We've thrown it out there. I'm sure it won't change at all, the format or the rules.
I'm pretty sold on this. I know we've changed.
I'm married.
Changed it 19 times, but this is, we're sealing this right now. This is branded. It's match play, 36 holes, Riverbend.
I'm going to be down there in my pink River Island shirt, which I wore yesterday to work.
River Islands. River Hills.
Or River Hills. I'm going to have my Dristar Lakeside golf shirt.
Oh, you know what I'll be wearing the final round. You already know that's coming. It's
Stallion Mountain. The Stallion Mountain one is so much better. I'm really upset.
It's
about
a Stallion Mountain shirt, and
by Puma.
Puma, and I will be wearing a Chubbs Peterson hat. just to commemorate Carl Weathers.
Can we go ahead, listeners? If anyone can connect us with an interview with Carl Weathers, we will bring you, we will pay for you to come in and golf for a weekend with us. If you can get Carl Weathers on the line, we will make it worth your while.
Lodgings, accommodations, merchandise.
A lot of merch. Carl, you've got to come on. I mean, we have a name. We have a slogan now after you, Weathered. That's when Mike said it's over. One swing into the third major. Can we have a little moment of reflection, by the way? Lenny, if you could, I want some reflective music, because I had the opportunity to listen to the finish pod today from episode 11. You and I have an awareness, thanks to Adrian. We have an awareness about a lot of things.
Thanks, Adrian.
Our own mental fragile state. We've always been aware of it, but for the first time in my life, I felt like I was unaware of the level that it had reached. For anybody that hasn't listened to episode 11, Mike talks about how for 2 months he's played the best golf of his life, the most impenetrable mental swing strong golf of his life, and one swing into the weekend, he's lost it. It might have been my most favorite thing ever to listen to. That was a life highlight.
I'm glad it warmed your life.
And just like that, it was gone. One swing.
The sad part is that is...
It's true.
It's a true story. It's not even based on a true story. It is a true story.
It is a true story. You literally were like, I'm done. I was like, it's your tee shot on the first hole.
Yep. There we go.
Oh, that was fantastic. Well,
one other thing to bring up is... Speaking of Carl Weathers, the winner of this event needs some sort of trophy. And I don't know if that's if we can get our hands on the wooden Chubbs Peterson prosthetic hand. Or if we can get the championship belt with the blood on it from Rocky IV.
Or the painting. Can we get the oil painting?
Where they're both landing punches at the exact same time.
Does anybody have access to that oil painting?
I'm pretty sure we can get a print. Can we get... Maybe we do this. All right.
Here we go. Buckle up.
I'm pretty sure I've already decided what we're going to do. We are going to send Carl Weathers a print of our choice.
Yes.
And ask him to sign it. And ask him I think he'll do it. I think we just ask him to inscribe it to the winner. It's very well deserved. It's over, Carl Weathers.
To the winner, you can finally say it's over.
Yes. Carl. Yes.
Love Carl.
Love Carl. Hashtag be peace. I think Carl would do this.
So what picture, if you had to nominate three potential pictures off the top of your head for him to sign, what would they be?
All right, number one.
Right now, off the cuff.
Number one is the still of his arm getting knocked off, shot off in Predator. Where he's screaming in one hand, he's firing off a an automatic weapon, and his other arm has been blown off.
Hashtag true story.
The second one would be the second one would be of him dead in Rocky's arms with the towel that Rocky failed to throw in against Drago. And then the third one, which would probably be the most realistic one that he would actually sign, is of the beach run, where him and Rocky are neck and neck. I'll probably pick a still where he's ahead, though.
What if it's a trophy? What if it's a picture that the loser has to hang up in their house, and all it says is, it's a picture of him in Rocky's arms, and it just says, if he dies, he dies.
If you lost, you lost. Love, Carl Weathers. Be peace. Hashtag be peace.
Wow, those are three strong nominees.
I felt good about that. Do you have any other? Did I miss something? Would you add anything in there?
I think the first thing that came to my mind, I think I'd have to send him the twist picture.
It's all on the hips. Oh, you mean your twist picture?
My twist picture.
And he could sign it on your gut.
He can sign my belly, and I think he could get all the letters on there. He may be able to get the saying on there. But my first thought was the twist picture. I think my second thought would be it would be when he's poking Happy. I'd want a picture of when he's poking Happy with his fingers right in the chest. I think the third picture would be the picture at his memorial service.
From Rocky?
No. Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. I was actually thinking about Happy Gilmore.
with his hand just there?
How many movies has he died in? Carl, you got to get a role where you live. Gosh, what range? What range is an actor? Just incredible range. Carl, you got to come on the pod.
He's got to come on.
Anybody, please. I mean, can we flood this guy with requests to come on the podcast?
Well, that escalated quickly. But to move on from Carl Weathers to the actual subject of this podcast, after that conversation, Eli played over the weekend and put up an 80 to drop to a 7.4 handicap index, and I also put up an 80 to drop back to a 7.3. After almost a full year of this, we are separated by a mere tenth of a point. And now we've reached the home stretch. It's 8 weeks until our trip to Alabama. And then 2 weeks after that, the final major, and then the quest is over. So if we're going to make a significant move on the handicap, it's got to be now. And hopefully, we'll talk about the start of that move next time on Chasing Scratch. As always, thanks for listening today. If you like this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a review. We would appreciate it. If you'd like to interact with us, the best way to do that is on Twitter, @ChasingScratchZero. We were mixed today, as always, by Lenny Sterner, directed by KF Rager, produced by Flatside, charity donations provided by the Unified Fund, music credits are in the show notes, and our next episode will likely be in 2 weeks. We'll talk to you then.